Welcome to another episode of the Jeremiah Patterson Show, and happy Sunday, and thanks for joining me. Charles Swain was born in 1842 in Guyenne Court, Delaware. After he occupied an illegal practice at the University of Pennsylvania, he relocated to Pensacola, Florida. In 1888, Swain campaigned for a seat on the Florida Supreme Court. The campaign was unsuccessful, but alternatively, he was nominated to serve on the United States District Court for the Northern District of Florida. Subsequently, he received what is called a recess appointment from Benjamin Harrison on May 17, 1889. Benjamin Harrison had to become president on March 4, 1889. Of course, we all know it takes a while for nominees to be confirmed by the U.S. Senate. That's how it's supposed to happen. The Senate confirms the people that the president nominates. That goes for the Secretary of Defense, the Secretary of State, Attorney General, and so on. But it just took a while for Charles Swain to be confirmed, just as it did with Brett Kavanaugh and Clarence Thomas, except there's no correlation between the three. Article 2, Section 2, Clause 2 of the United States Constitution reads, quote, empowers the President of the United States to nominate and with the advice and consent, confirmation of the United States Senate, appoint public officials, end quote. As stated in the Constitution, if the president appoints you, the Senate will hold a public trial and then vote for a confirmation on that person. The prospect of a nominee being confirmed is contingent on the U.S. Senate. Before the person can be confirmed, there are questions you might want to think about. What have you done in the past that could be controversial to you being confirmed? Why did the president appoint you? Why do you think you're capable of being in this position? What do you wish to achieve in this position? How are you going to do it differently than your predecessor? I mean, these are questions that'll initially be convenient to confirming a nominee. When these type of questions are asked, and everything is out there, you'll have a conspicuously dilated picture of what the confirmation process could inevitably look like. Is this a person that's incompetent and remarkably unqualified for this office? It's always good to dig deeper and get all the answers rather than not digging at all and ending up with a political calamity. So yes, according to the U.S. Constitution, the President of the United States has the power to nominate people to high-ranking positions. However, they are not immediately confirmed. It's not just like some job where you fill out an application and you start 2 days later or the next week. No, that's not how it works, because our founding fathers were smarter than to let that happen. So they gave the Senate the power to question and confirm nominees. They gave the power to the Senate for a reason, so that people wouldn't just be nominated and be in the job the next day, especially if they were corrupt. Instead, this was the way it would be done. This strategically intelligent and imperative decision is still essential today. As I aforementioned, it is beneficial for many different reasons. Another thing that the Constitution gave Congress was the ability to impeach. And so it was given to the House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate, and the U.S. Senate as well. The House will impeach, and the Senate will hold a trial to see if the president or whomever is guilty. If they are found guilty, they are removed from office. And if they are found innocent, they are acquitted of all charges. This power given to Congress was used on Charles Swain over a century ago. Charles Swain was impeached by the House of Representatives on December 13, 1904, on charges of abusive contempt power and other misuses of his office. The articles presented against Swain specifically alleged that he had failed to live in his district as required by law. It also noted that he used the property of a bankrupt corporation for his own benefit, Charles Swain's impeachment resolution says, quote, "Whereas the reputation of Charles Swain as a corrupt judge is very injurious to the interest of the entire state of Florida, and his constant absence from his supposed district caused great sacrifice on their rights and annoyance and expense to litigants in his court. Whereas it also appears that the said Charles Swain is not only a corrupt judge, but that he is ignorant and incompetent, and that his judicial opinions do not command the respect or confidence of the people." End quote. Charles Swain was on trial for 3 months. He was then acquitted on February 27th, 1905. Although he was acquitted, his attorneys believed he had committed several of the alleged crimes. According to the constitutionallawreporter.com, the majority of the senators did not believe his offenses amounted to, quote, high crimes and misdemeanors as delineated in the Constitution, end quote. So, on December 18th, 2019, President Trump was impeached. Speaker Pelosi recently sent the articles of impeachment over to the Senate. Although the House impeached him, the Senate ultimately convicts him. Will the Senate convict him? I don't know. My question is, will President Trump be acquitted just as Charles Swain was? How will it ultimately turn out? If this president is not acquitted and instead convicted, will the next person in line, which is Mike Pence, pardon him? When Nixon resigned, Gerald Ford pardoned him. What will inevitably transpire this time? Will anybody be replaced? Will he be acquitted? We already know that President Trump was impeached on December 18th, 2017. His trial and the prospect of him being convicted is still contingent in the United States Senate. Even though we don't know what will happen, we do know the backstory. And I'm going to get to that later. We do know the backstory. We do know what happened. We do know that President Trump took office on January 20th, 2017. We do know key members like Gordon Sondland said in the House hearings, he said that, quote, "everyone is in the loop," end quote. I recently did an episode on that. We do know that this president, if acquitted of these crimes that he has so forth committed, it could be kind of controversial and kind of intimidating. Because what should not happen and what cannot happen is corruption becoming normalized by the American Republic. I mean, this is a republic. Our founding fathers built this republic more than 240 years ago. And the one thing that they were very much concerned about is foreign countries interfering in U.S. elections. In 2016, Russia interfered in the United States elections. And the Mueller report was written on that. 400-page report. President Trump explicitly and deliberately asked China on the White House lawn to, hey, come join the party, come interfere too. I mean, what will happen this time that'll be so, so intimidating, so controversial, so severe that it almost annihilates our republic? If corruption is normalized, and this president's iniquitous behavior is normalized, this will cause disruption, it will cause chaos and mystification and so much more. But we do know this from the Senate resolution that Mitch McConnell wrote, and I'm going to read that resolution right now. "To provide for related procedures concerning the articles of impeachment against Donald John Trump, President of the United States. Resolved that the House of Representatives shall file its record with the Secretary of the Senate, which will consist of those publicly available materials that have been submitted to or produced by the House Judiciary Committee, including transcripts of public hearings or markups of any materials presented by the House of Representatives or the House Judiciary Committee pursuant to House Resolution 660. Materials in this record may be admitted into evidence by motion made after the Senate has disposed of the question of whether it shall be in order to consider and debate under the impeachment rules any motion to subpoena witnesses or documents. All materials filed pursuant to this paragraph shall be printed and made available to all parties. The President and the House of Representatives shall have until 9 o'clock a.m. on Wednesday, January 22, 2020, to file any motions permitted under the rules of impeachment, with the exception of motions to subpoena witnesses or documents or any other evidentiary motions. Responses to any such motions shall be filed no later than 11 o'clock a.m. on Wednesday, January 22, 2020. All materials filed pursuant to this paragraph shall be filed with the Secretary and be printed and made available to all parties. Arguments on such motions shall begin at 1 o'clock p.m. on Wednesday, January 22, 2020, and each side may determine the number of persons to make its representation, to make its presentation, following which the Senate shall deliberate, if so ordered under the impeachment rules, and vote on any such motions. Following the disposition of such motions, or if no motions are made, then the House of Representatives shall make its presentation in support of the articles of impeachment for a period of time in support of the articles of impeachment for a period of time not to exceed 24 hours over up to 2 session days. Following the House of Representatives' presentation, the President shall make his presentation for a period not to exceed 24 hours. Over up to 2 session days, each side may determine the number of persons to make its presentation. Upon the conclusion of the President's presentation, senators may question the parties for a period of time not to exceed 16 hours. Upon the conclusion of questioning by the Senate, there shall be 4 hours of argument by the parties, equally divided, following by deliberation by the Senate, if so ordered under the impeachment rules, on the question of whether it shall be in order to consider and debate under the impeachment rules any motion to subpoena witnesses or documents. The Senate, without any intervening action, motion, or amendment, shall then decide by the yeas and nays whether it shall be in order to consider and debate under the impeachment rules any motion to subpoena witnesses or documents. Following this disposition of that question, other motions provided under the impeachment rules shall be in order. If the Senate agrees to allow either the House of Representatives or the President to subpoena witnesses, the witnesses shall first be deposed, and the Senate shall decide after deposition which witnesses shall testify. Pursuant to the impeachment rules, no testimony shall be admissible in the Senate unless the parties have had an opportunity to depose such witnesses. At the conclusion of the deliberations by the Senate shall vote on each article of impeachment. Once again, this is the Senate resolution. It is diametrically different than the House's resolution, which I do have here as well. But as just as I was saying, as I opened up in my opening statements, as I aforementioned, Charles Swain, very interesting person, Charles Swain, a judge on the United States District Court for the Northern District of California. He was appointed and nominated by President Benjamin Harrison on May 17th, 1889. I mean, Charles Swain, Charles Swain, this interesting political person who was nominated by President Benjamin Harrison, was impeached for abuse of contempt power. He was impeached for living out of district, being corrupt, being incompetent, and ignorant. Charles Swain was impeached on these things, on these matters. He was nominated by President Benjamin Harrison. Getting him confirmed by the United States Senate was a laborious process. His impeachment in the his trial lasted in the Senate for 3 months. I mean, such an interesting person. Charles Swain, once again, Charles Swain. He was a judge on the United States District Court for the Northern District of Florida. My question still remains, and the question still remains, will President Trump be acquitted of all charges just as just as Charles Swain was, just as Judge Swain was acquitted? Will President Trump be acquitted? That is the remaining question. That is an open question. We'll just have to see. What we do know is that the State of the Union is on February 4th, 2020. It is coming up. We do know that the election is coming up. Much more ahead.
What's your dream? To win championships? A scholarship? Do you want to be a bigger athlete than Serena Williams? Or do you want to be the first girl to play for the Yankees? Can you be the generation that ends gender inequality? But will you show that champions in your sport can also look like you? Maybe your dream is to be the first 13-year-old to go pro. Or to push a sport to accept everyone just as they are. But the craziest dream of all is the one that starts a million more.
All right, before the break, I read McConnell's resolution to you. So essentially, the president will make his presentation and subsequently the Senate will vote on both articles. The State of the Union is next month on February 4th. Could they be rushing so he can say confidently that they had nothing on him and it was all a sham and a hoax? I mean, you have to think critically here, especially for such an interesting phenomenon that's taking place currently. We know that military aid was withheld from Ukraine and that the president was aware of this.
U.S. Ambassador to the EU Gordon Sondland testified that he personally worked to get Ukraine to publicly announce investigations that President Trump wanted.
Was there a quid pro quo? As I testified previously, with regard to the requested White House call and the White House meeting, the answer is yes.
But Sondland said he didn't realize the company Burisma was tied to the Bidens. He also said he was not part of a shadow campaign to get Ukraine to cooperate with the president.
Everyone was in the loop.
Sondland said President Trump, Vice President Pence, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, Energy Secretary Rick Perry, former National Security Advisor John Bolton, and White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney all went along with the plan. Sondland told lawmakers he spoke to President Trump directly about the investigations. The chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, Adam Schiff, said Sondland's testimony is among the most significant.
It goes right to the heart of the issue of bribery, as well as other potential high crimes or misdemeanors.
Sondland also told lawmakers that after learning that military aid to Ukraine was on hold, he came to the conclusion that that aid was also dependent on those investigations. President Trump mounted his own defense, quoting one conversation in which Sondland asked him what he wanted from Ukraine.
I say to the ambassador in response, I want nothing, I want nothing, I want no quid pro quo.
In Washington, Alexandra Limon.
That's Gordon Sondland confirming that everyone is in the loop. And this is no thing that only, and this is not a thing that only one or two people knew about. I want to play down this audio clip.
Letter to Pelosi say?
We'll be issuing a letter. As everybody knows, we've been treated very unfairly, very different from anybody else. If you go over not only history, I mean, you go over any aspect of life, you'll see how unfairly we've been treated. We've done a fantastic job. Everything to me is about corruption. We want to find out what happened with 2016, and as you know, there's a lot of work going on in that. I don't care about Biden's campaign, but I do care about corruption. His campaign, that's up to him. Politics, that's up to them. I don't care about politics. Politics, as I think I made clear, and yesterday somebody asked me a question, and I gave an answer, but always in the form of corruption. What I want to do, and I think I have an obligation to do it, probably a duty to do it, corruption. We are looking for corruption. When you look at what Biden and his son did, and when you look at other people, what they've done, and I believe there was tremendous corruption with Biden, but I think there was beyond corruption, having to do with the 2016 campaign and what these lowlifes did to so many people, to hurt so many people in the Trump campaign, which was successful despite all of the fighting us. I mean, despite all of the unfairness. So we are looking at corruption. We're not looking at politics. We're looking at corruption.
The letter that's being referenced in that soundbite is the same letter I wrote an essay on. And that's next on the Jeremiah Patterson Show. The quote of the day today is by Kobe Bryant. He once said, quote, "The most important thing is to try and inspire people so that they can be great in whatever they want to do." The last note is next. The Honorable Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House of Representatives, Washington, D.C., 20515. Dear Madam Speaker, I write to express my strongest and most powerful protest against the partisan impeachment crusade being pursued by the Democrats in the House of Representatives. This impeachment represents an unprecedented and unconstitutional abuse of power by Democrat lawmakers, unequaled in nearly 2.5 centuries of American legislation history. The articles of impeachment introduced by the House Judiciary Committee are not recognizable under any standard of the constitutional theory, interpretation, or jurisprudence. They include no crimes, no misdemeanors, and no offenses whatsoever. You have cheapened the importance of the very ugly word impeachment. Those are just the first two paragraphs of President Trump's letter to Speaker Nancy Pelosi. I must say that was very fun to read in writing this essay. And here is the essay. The Salem witch trials was a disturbing time in American history. It was an unscrupulous process of false accusations and pernicious deaths. The Salem witch trials were profoundly misogynistic, inequitable, and very much so in an intimidating time to be alive. This paper analyzes the current administration's outlandish analogy of the Salem witch trials. On December 17, 2019, President Trump wrote a letter to Speaker Nancy Pelosi. This letter was written and delivered to Speaker Nancy Pelosi the day before the historical impeachment vote of the president. He was reluctant to accept the fact that his impeachment was inevitable. This letter to the speaker was pugnacious. In this letter, President Trump attacked the speaker and accused her of abusing her power. This letter viciously attacked the speaker in an aggressive way. It showed reluctance of the president's ability to develop a positive political relationship. This also showed how hostile the president is towards bipartisanship. Many of the president's points used to attack the speaker were false. For instance, President Trump said the speaker viewed democracy as her enemy. Reading forward into the president's letter to Speaker Nancy Pelosi, President Trump made the astonishing analogy of the Salem witch trials and referred it to his impeachment process. The president said, quote, more due process was afforded to those accused in the Salem witch trials, end quote. As a student who studied the Salem witch trials and analyzed the information meticulously, I feel as if the statement was irrelevant. People in the Salem witch trials were treated extremely worse than the current president. The Salem witch trials was a very unsettling phenomenon in our nation's history. People were brutally tortured and falsely accused of witchcraft. The Salem witch trials was conducted in a misogynistic way. As innocent women were accused of being witches. The first woman accused of witchcraft was Tituba. She was a Native American. Tituba was also accused of witchcraft because of the theorization that she told girls voodoo stories, but this was a false accusation. The president's use of this analogy was misinterpreted and completely taken out of context. In a HuffPost article I previously read, Mayor Kim Driscoll of Salem, Massachusetts, stated that the situation in the Salem witch trials was different. She stated that people were brutally hanged or pressed to death. Based on the current administration, this is not the same analogy as President Trump stated. Mayor Driscoll stated that this was a dubious legal process that bears no relation to televised impeachment. Mayor Kim Driscoll also tweeted that the president's analogy is outlandish and preposterous. She even recommended that the president, quote, learn some history, end quote. In conclusion, the president's analogy that more due process was given to those in the Salem witch trials was inaccurate. The fact is that no one was brutally hanged or murdered in the current president's administration. Therefore, there are no actual truths to this outlandish analogy. And that was my essay on the president's outlandish analogy that more due process was afforded to those in the Salem witch trials than himself. I mean, we have not seen any indication that any member of the Trump administration was brutally murdered or hanged. But we did see that in the Salem witch trials, a diabolical and devastatingly pernicious time in American history. That is why I say the analogy was outlandish. And that was the president's letter to Speaker Nancy Pelosi on December 17th, 2019. That was one day before he's impeached. Well, that does it for me. Thank you for being with us today. Happy Sunday. Also, you should note that you can make a small contribution or any type of contribution, large or small, to the Jeremiah Patterson Show by visiting our website on Anchor, which will be in the description of this episode. You can send me a voice message by visiting our website as well. Make sure to give this podcast a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts and leave a positive review. Share this episode with a friend or a loved one. Have a great day. Thanks for listening. And remember to stay positive and inspired.